Well, just for a bit of time this morning before we sing and then we head over for the baptism itself, I want to try and explain to you what a baptism is. Why are we doing this this morning? A few years ago, I remember we went on holiday to France, and our French, by the way, is up, pretty much up to the standards of saying parlez-vous anglais. We saw a notice for this sort of French artistic dance performance, and it was free. I thought, well, if it's free, we'll go along. We'll go and have a look. So we went in, we sat down to watch, and it consisted of quite a short, random sort of modern dance performance with people just doing odd shapes with their bodies. And then they sat down, they started to talk about it for ages in French. And we started looking for the exit quite quickly. We sat there thinking, what on earth is happening, and how do we get out of here as fast as we can? And we did eventually creep out. Now, it may be that you're sitting here with the same sort of feeling, thinking, this is not a place I would normally come. I'm not really sure exactly what I'm meant to be doing. Maybe you're already looking forward to the exit. Well, my hope is that by talking for a bit about what we're actually doing, it will help you understand what is a baptism? Why are you here? Why are we here this morning to witness Bronwen being baptised? Now, let me start by saying a few things that a baptism is not. This is not simply a family tradition where you take your children along to the local church, whether as babies or when they're a bit older, and you sprinkle them with some water, because that way, at least if, you know, if the worst happens, if they get hit by a bus, at least they've been sprinkled so we all know they're safe. That's not what's going on here. It's not some sort of initiation. You know, you watch these American college fraternals, and they all have to do some wacky, crazy, embarrassing initiation ceremony to get into the group. This isn't just an initiation thing to join a club. It's not a ceremony where someone devotes themselves to some sort of a lifelong, you know, thing of becoming a nun or a monk or something like that, some sort of separation vow. It's not a way of getting extra credits as a Christian. Now you study, you do your degree or whatever, and you get extra credits if you do something that goes above and beyond. This isn't the way of getting extra credits as a Christian. That's not what a baptism is. And it's not actually the washing away of sins either. Nothing special in that sense happens in the water. There's nothing special about the water. It's just tap water. Warm tap water, we hope, at least. So what is a baptism then? Well, baptism's a picture. What you're going to witness this morning is a picture of what happened to Bronwen when God intervened in her life. You heard her tell her story in her own words, and the baptism is a visual representation of the words of what she's just told you in her story. When God intervened in Bronwen's life. Now, you may think, oh, that's a big claim to make. The God who made all the billions of people in this world and everything, he spoke to, he intervened with Bronwen. Hey, no offence, Bronwen, but, you know, come on, hasn't God got... Well, that's the amazing thing. God speaks and deals with us as individuals. Now, if Bronwen were the only person saying this, she was the only person saying, God intervened in my life. He came to me. If she was the only person saying it, we'd probably put her on the same level as people who say Napoleon Bonaparte came and knocked on my door and had a cup of tea. You know, we'd write this off. This is all a bit crazy. Let's put it. But actually, there's many more people than just Bronwen saying this. Imagine for a moment, someone came running through the door now, and forget about the fact that it would be a bit rude to interrupt the service. They came running in and they shouted out, guys, Boris Johnson's on the street just outside, and he's signing t-shirts. He's signing autographs. Now, forget whether you would want a signed t-shirt by Boris Johnson or not. Forget whether you love him or hate him. If just one person did that, I probably would just politely ask them to sit down and say, I think you're probably mistaken. Please, you know, it's just one person. But this isn't just one person. When we're talking about Bronwen's story, millions of people. Imagine if hundreds of people came and said, Boris Johnson's outside. Hundreds of people, you might start to take them seriously. Well, woman's experience, her testimony isn't unique. There are millions of people saying the same thing. God changed my life. I met with him personally. So I want to look at this story of what happened in Saul's life, because it'll help us understand what happened with Bronwyn. Now, Saul was a Pharisee. He was a Jewish religious leader. He was a very religious man, but he hated Christians. You read that in the verses that he was breathing threats out against them. He wanted them imprisoned. He wanted them dead. He had all the right paperwork, so he had authority to head down the road to Damascus and hunt down the Christians there and put them in prison. That's why he was on this road to Damascus. That's what he's doing, travelling there. So this isn't a man who had had family pressure on him to become a Christian. It's not a man with a history of hallucinations. This isn't a desperate man with nothing left to live for. He's just feeling aimless, wondering what to do with himself. This is an educated, intelligent man with a good career, well respected in his community, not looking for anything, any sort of new religious experience. He knew what he was about. He knew what he believed in. All he wanted was to go and make life difficult for those Christians in Damascus. That's what he was doing on the road. That, I think it's fair to say, this man Saul is the least likely person in the whole world to be baptized. Because he wasn't just casually indifferent. He wasn't one of those people who say, well, I don't mind going to church at Christmas and Easter. I think it's quite a nice thing. No, he was venomous in his hatred of Christianity. He got angry when he thought about Jesus. He was convinced about what he thought. This is the least likely convert in the whole of Israel at the time. And yet, as he's on this road to Damascus, something happens. We heard about it. This bright light shines down from heaven, and he falls on the ground, and then he hears a voice. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? So the story of someone becoming a Christian is the story of God intervening in their life. It's not a story about someone becoming a better person or more religious or a desperate, miserable person finding something they can lean on for their life. It's a story of God intervening, dealing with us as individuals. Well, Jesus carries on and he says to Saul, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. It is hard for you to kick against the goads. I don't know about you. I read something like that. I think I've no idea what that means. Kick against the goads. I don't think I've ever heard the word goads really used in normal everyday life. But I'll tell you, it was a well-known saying back then. Kicking against the goads, a farmer would use a pointy bit of wood to prod an ox so he would move forward and plough the field. But sometimes the ox was stubborn and he'd kick back against this pointy piece of wood, because he didn't want to do the work, didn't want to go in the direction he was told. You can start to see now the picture he's saying there about Saul. Saul, you're kicking against the goads. You're kicking back. You're fighting. Jesus knows what's actually going on in Saul's heart, on the inside. He knows what's happening in his life. So on the outside, I think Saul seemed very strong, determined, ambitious, knew what he was all about in life. But Jesus is able to see inside and say, yeah, but on the inside, you're kicking back. He knew that there was a troubled conscience on the inside. He doesn't tell us what more that was. But he was a Jewish man. He was committed to following things like the Ten Commandments. And I suspect he just knew he couldn't do it. He knew he wasn't living as he should have been. He was searching. He was restless. He was probably, at least in some ways, unhappy. And I think his hatred of Christians is his response to that. It's a way of dealing with that, trying to put it to one side, busying himself. Because sometimes we do that. When we don't want to hear our conscience speak to us, we just get on with things and make ourselves really busy so that we can forget about that thing that troubles us. It may well be that, like Saul, you'd say, do you know what, I'm probably the least likely convert as well. Someone like me, And you wouldn't predict that of me. And yet, just like Saul, you're also restless on the inside. You're troubled, you're stressed, you're nervous, and maybe no one else can even see it, but on the inside it's there. Well, listen on, because God deals with those things in our lives. He can speak to those things. So Jesus shines this spotlight on Saul. He tells Saul what he's doing. He says, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." He pinpoints what Saul is doing is wrong. And do you know, he does that with us too. I don't know if you noticed that in Bronwyn. Bronwyn was telling us her story. She said, "I came to realise I was a sinner, that I've done things that are wrong." And do you know, that's true of all of us. She's not telling us something that's unusual about her. That's true of all of us. God says we push back against him. We push back against our Creator in all sorts of ways. We disobey him. We turn away from him. But Bronwyn's saying she's been baptized because she's come to realize, I need to be forgiven for those things. And God can do that. Well, Saul asks two questions. And you know, they're two of the most important questions anyone can ever ask. The first one he asks is this, in verse 5, "Who are you, Lord?" Who is Jesus? That's the first question he asks. And the second question he asks in verse 6, "Lord, what do you want me to do?" Do you know, maybe you're here this morning and your conscience is still needling away at you, prodding you, making you feel uncomfortable. And you're not sure where to start. These two questions are possibly the best place to start. Who are you, Jesus? And what do you want me to do? Asking God those two questions. Do you know, they're hard questions to ask, especially the second one. The second one I think we find very difficult to ask, what do you want me to do? Because by implication it involves putting our hands up, surrender, saying, okay, you tell me what to do. And you know, we don't like that, because our natural instinct is, well, I'm in charge, I steer this ship, I make the decisions, I'm the master of my destiny. And yet God says, no, actually, this is the world I've made. I'm in charge. And I offer you forgiveness, but you need to be ready to listen. You need to be ready to do what I tell you. Well, the light was so bright for Saul that he couldn't see at all for 3 days. But then we carried on reading towards the end of the section we read in verse 18. It said something like scales fell from his eyes. He received his sight at once, he arose, and he was baptized. I just want you to picture that scene for a moment. What a sight it was. The most unlikely convert in Israel, the man who Christians would stay away from because he was trying to imprison them all and get them into trouble, the man who terrified so many with his actions, all of a sudden he's going down into the water to be baptized. It says the scales came down from his eyes. In other words, he can start to say, I can see clearly now. I've got the answer to those two big questions. Who is Jesus? Well, I know now. I've worked it out. God's helped me to see what's going on. Jesus himself is God come down to earth, dying on the cross, taking my sin, my punishment, because I put my trust in him. And he's got the answer to that second question as well. What does he want me to do? Now, this is the exciting bit. God doesn't say to us, do the religious equivalent of climbing Mount Everest. Go on, off you go. Here's this huge thing. You know, I want you to do this. I want you to do that. Do all these things, and then I'll take you to heaven. He doesn't say, look, stop doing loads of bad things. Do loads and loads of good things. And as long as the scales balance out really nicely, you'll be okay. He doesn't say earn enough credits to get into heaven and you get loads of bonus points for being baptized. He doesn't say any of those things. He simply says that believe it to be true for you. For you. You need to be saved. You can't do it yourself. But Jesus died on the cross so you can be forgiven and saved. So I was saying we're trying to understand what's going on in a baptism. That is it in a nutshell. Baptism's a picture it's a public declaration of what's happened to Bronwyn on the inside, of God's dealings with her. And we use water because water's just that picture, a picture of being washed clean. There's a great picture of this. It's a You might not have heard of Kanye West. Maybe some of you have. But Kanye West is this American rapper, singer-songwriter. He's one of the best-selling musicians. All right, he's sold, I think, 140 million records. I had a look. He's married to Kim Kardashian. If none of these names mean anything to you, don't worry about looking them up, okay? But I'll tell you what's interesting. This megastar, Kanye West, has recently come out and said he's become a Christian. And he stopped his next album. His next album was meant to be called Yandy. And he stopped it, didn't release it. He released a new album instead, a bit later, just very recently, the last couple of weeks. He released this new album called Jesus is King. And one of his songs, he says this: everyone wanted Yandy, then Jesus Christ did the laundry. I just think that's a great picture of actually what's going on. Do the laundry, because it's this picture of us being dirty, mess up our sins and needing to be made clean. Doing the laundry, that's what Jesus does. He cleans us up on the inside. That's what happened in Saul's life. He didn't know God. He knew all about God, but he didn't know him himself. And now Saul is like a shop that's under new management. Yeah, he would have looked just the same. If you'd have spoken to him, he'd have had the same voice. All those things would have been the same, but just like a shop under new management, you go on the inside and things can look different. New prices, new ways of doing things. Saul's got new ambitions, new motivations, new direction in life. Many years later, C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis, he wrote The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and all the Narnia Chronicles. He had a very similar experience. So he felt trouble in his conscience. Whenever he stopped working for a moment, I'm quoting him now, he said he felt the steady, unrelenting approach of him who I so earnestly desired not to meet. You see what he's saying? It's exactly the same as Saul. I didn't want to meet God. I was trying to stay away from him, trying to busy myself in work, and yet I kept on feeling God is trying to deal with me. And I keep trying to push him away. And he says, he describes the day when he says, I gave in and admitted that God was God and knelt and prayed. Perhaps that night the most dejected and reluctant convert in the whole of England. Same sort of thing again. You've got Saul, this religious Jewish man. Talk about Kanye West, this American rapper who had all sorts of things going on in his life. C.S. Lewis, this Irish academic, this writer of these great stories. And then we add to that list Bronwen as well. What a diverse bunch of people. Imagine sticking those four people in a room together. All their different experiences and stories and so on. But the one thing that's true of all of them, God's come, he's intervened, he's saved, and more life-changing divine encounters are possible for us as well. Well, finally, just before we finish, whenever I baptise someone, I like to speak to that person just individually for a moment. So Bronwen, this is for us, okay? But everyone else can listen. I know everyone's experience of becoming a Christian is different. Sometimes they are this road to Damascus type experience that we've just read about with Saul. But you've told us yours, and yours wasn't like that. It wasn't flashing lights and falling on the road and so on. It wasn't this road to Damascus type experience. And sometimes we can feel really disappointed by that, and we can feel envious of people like C.S. Lewis or whatever, who did have that sort of way of coming to the Lord Jesus. Don't be disappointed. The amazing thing in Saul's story isn't the details, the who said what, all that sort of thing. The amazing thing is that God chose to be gracious to you and save you. The amazing thing is that it happened. You put your trust in Jesus Christ. Don't be jealous about the details. Don't wish someone else's story was yours. This is yours. This is how God chose to deal with you, and it's just as special. Well, we're going to sing. We're going to stand and sing our next song. This song is just on the screen again. It's called His Robes for Mine. This is another song that just explains what Jesus Christ does for us at the cross. So we'll stand and sing, and then if you take your seats when we finish singing, I'll pray and I'll explain what happens next. So we'll stand to sing this.